You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
For today's passage, we're going to eavesdrop on an iconic conversation where Jesus is messing with conventional wisdom, and once again, the Pharisees are the stand-ins for the religious stiffs who just don't get it. Let's review our cast of characters. The majority of people in Jesus' Palestine belonged to the lowest caste of people. Many were destitute former farmers who had been taxed off their property by unscrupulous tax collectors. But it included all sorts of folks considered unclean outcasts, including orphans and widows, the blind, the crippled, the mentally ill. And why were they unclean? Remember the Deuteronomic code? You get what you deserve, and you deserve what you get. In the minds of the Pharisees, they were poor, crippled, or blind because God was punishing them. Then there were the tax collectors. These were Jews who were subcontractors of the Imperial Roman taxation industrial complex. They made their living by exacting any amount they could over and above what was required by the Romans. In so doing, they became rich. And naturally, they were considered traitors who benefited from collaborating with the occupying Roman authorities at the expense of their own people. So, in our dinner scene, we not only have those who are victims of the Romans, but Roman collaborators sitting down together at table. So, of course, the Pharisees are confused. The core of their religious outlook is on maintaining a purity culture that excludes these very people. And here's Jesus just blowing them off and saying, being exclusive and all judgy of others is not what I'm on about. So why don't you go away and get over yourselves, and then we can talk. Remember, Jesus is meddling with the Pharisees' whole worldview, a worldview that puts them at the top of the pile and justifies their selfish claims to superiority at the expense of others. How convenient for them. Plus, Jesus is telling them that God doesn't work the way they think God works. God has a preference, not for you, Jesus tells the Pharisees, but for the very people you are excluding and condemning. Sorry, Pharisees.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax collection station, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him.
And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?"
But when Jesus heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
I'm going to assume that if I were to apologize to you for a butt dial, most of you know what I'm talking about, yeah? I'm also going to assume that at least as many of you are familiar with the slang term for arranging an intimate encounter as a booty call. Well, Here's the problem. Our culture and language is changing so quickly that I reckon 2,000 years from now, people will simply not be able to comprehend the difference between butt dial and booty call. Butt dial, booty call. And this is exactly why, 2,000 years after it was written, the Bible is hard to understand. And that's why most people just don't bother. We've talked about some of these statistics before, that only 4 out of 10 Americans can name more than 4 of the 10 commandments, and that fewer than half can cite any of the authors of the 4 Gospels. Fully 12% believe that Joan of Arc was Noah's wife. And one of my favorite answers to polls assessing religious knowledge is the number of people who believe Wicca is a kind of woven patio furniture. And look, people's failure to answer these superficial biblical or religious trivia questions may indeed be evidence of our nation's general educational and cultural decline. But none of it matters compared to one sobering statistic. 3/4 of Americans actually believe that the Bible teaches God helps those who help themselves. What? This notion is not only not biblical, it's Benjamin Franklin, but profoundly and irrefutably counter-biblical. Few ideas could be further from the gospel message of compassion, justice, and radical love for our neighbor. And yet, on the source of this essential culture-shaping value, 75% of Americans are wholly, completely, and hard-headedly wrong. And why are they wrong? Because they have no idea what is actually in the Bible. For being such a bestseller, it is the greatest story never read. And considering that Jews and Christians have been called people of the book, it would be much more accurate to call us the people of the unread book. And that's where we need to get on message today. Coming to terms with the disconnect between how we behave as a people and what the Bible actually teaches. For today's message, I have the writings of United Methodist climate activist and author Bill McKibben to thank as inspiration and springboard. McKibben asks if we remember when George Bush said that Jesus Christ was his favorite philosopher. Bush may or may not have been sincere, but he was reflecting the sincere belief of many Americans. Americans who genuinely believe that we're a Christian nation. And yet, while America is simultaneously the most professedly Christian of the developed nations, it is demonstrably the least Christian in its behavior. Depending on which poll you look at and how the question is asked, 80 to 88% or so of Americans call themselves Christian. By way of comparison, Israel is only 77% Jewish. 60% of Americans claim to pray daily, and 40% claim to go to church every week, both of which are lies told to pollsters. And yet, despite America being saturated with Christian identity, most people are happy to ignore the very specific teachings of Jesus, giving aid to the poorest people, the proverbial widows, orphans, and aliens among us. In fact, Jesus told his followers that the way you could tell the righteous from the damned was whether they fed the hungry, gave drink to the thirsty, clothed the naked, welcomed the stranger, and visited the prisoner. But depending on how you calculate the numbers, as a share of our economy, the United States ranks at the bottom or dead last among developed countries in foreign aid to poor countries. Per capita, we each provide around 15 cents a day in official development assistance to poor countries. And if you add private charities that some of us donate to, the average bumps up daily to about 21 cents. And domestically, now that pandemic-era family assistance has run out, our own child poverty rate just went back up to over 12%, compared to those godless socialists in Sweden with a 3% child poverty rate. So what are we to do with the fact that countries where religion is relatively unimportant, like Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, also are the countries that excel at caring for the poor? They provide universal health care, free education through to graduate school, and consistently rank highest on the Global Happiness Index. Meanwhile, in pretty much any measure of caring for the least among us, or collective care of one another, the so-called Christian United States comes in dead last among developed nations. We're also the most violent rich nation on earth, with a murder rate 5 times that of our European peers, prison populations, skewed, of course, toward incarcerating minorities, 45 times the size of other developed nations. And we're the only developed nation that still executes its own citizens, mostly in those states where Christianity is statistically strongest. We're also at the top of the charts in teenage pregnancy, obesity, and mass shootings. And all of this is not just due to our obsession with the lie that God helps those who help themselves and the Deuteronomic Code. We've also become distracted by a number of totally made up and fanciful competing creeds. One of the most quintessentially American examples is the fundamentalist Christian's fixation on the rapture and the end times. And if you don't believe this is a real thing, I direct you to the newest craze on social media, a new filter that lets people post what they think they will look like when being raptured. Unbelievable. People actually think that Jesus is going to physically come back again to knock heads and destroy the planet, rescuing only those who believe a very narrow set of propositions about Jesus' superiority to all others. Another distraction is what Bill McKibben calls a kind of soft focus emphasis on the individual needs of consumers and the achievement of financial success. Check out the sermon series at most conventional Christian churches about how to discipline your children, or how to reach your professional goals, or how to invest your money or reduce your debt. Joel Osteen and other prosperity gospel pastors make millions every year promoting this perspective. Meanwhile, there's one thing that the unrelenting self-obsession of conventional American Christianity manages to ignore: Jesus' radical and demanding focus on others. When asked what the core of the law was, Jesus replied, "To love your neighbor as yourself." And who is that neighbor? The poor person, the sick person, the naked person, the hungry person. Some people point to the decline in mainline Protestant church membership and mock us for not preaching the gospel. And yet, over the years, who has supported civil rights, voting rights, equal rights for women, reproductive rights, supported LGBTQIA folks, and taken steps to end homelessness, care for the immigrant, and stem the tide of child sexual abuse? I can tell you it hasn't been the evangelical and fundamentalist churches. And the people who attend these churches are not ignorant. They're just misled. Back in 1995, a Colorado juror pulled out a Bible during murder trial deliberations and pointed to where Leviticus 24 mentions an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and then concludes, "He that killeth a man shall be put to death." The juror encouraged the others to prayerfully ponder this passage for themselves. And the next day, the jury unanimously decided for the death penalty. 10 years later, on appeal, in 2005, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that the use of the Bible was not permitted because it was, quote, extraneous prejudicial material, unquote, and a new trial was ordered. Evangelical Christians lost their minds. "The government has no moral foundation." Propaganda petri dish focus on the family said, "It is a sad day when the Bible is banned from a jury room." And Governor Bill Owens decried the decision as, quote, "demeaning to people of faith," unquote. But the really sad part is what this story reveals about the biblical illiteracy of everyone involved. There are not many passages in the Hebrew Bible that are explicitly rejected in the New Testament, but Leviticus 24 is one of them. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, "You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, do not resist an evildoer. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also." Clearly, none of the jurors were aware of Jesus having refuted the eye for an eye rule and the new morality of turning the other cheek. They were bullied by a pious religious zealot who didn't know what he was talking about into doing exactly the opposite of what Jesus taught. Unfortunately, as religious history professor Stephen Prothero laments, "Americans' knowledge of religion runs as shallow as Americans' commitment to religion runs deep." Friends, the power of the religious right rests largely on the fact that it can count on people not being familiar with the Bible. Their theology coincides with the most primitive of tribal human urges. Their fear-mongering plays right into the political culture wars of hate and suspicion for the very people that Jesus told us to care for. And this zero-sum financial game that encourages people to hoard their resources for themselves in all its "God helps those who help themselves" glory. When Jesus sat down for dinner with tax collectors and sinners, he was acknowledging and treating with dignity the very people the Pharisees despised. And just like the Pharisees of old, today's conventional American Christians can't comprehend the justice-oriented, compassionate, mercy-emphasizing message of progressive Christianity. Why? Because they've been hornswoggled into practicing a self-obsessed, purity-focused, individualistic faith that is just the opposite of what Jesus taught. But in 40 years of ministry, here's what I've come to discover. Deep down, people know they're not getting the whole truth. They know that something's not quite right, and they're still dissatisfied. That's why many are leaving the church altogether. And that's also why it's so important for us to get on message and stay on message. People need to hear that there's an alternative to that other church experience. They need to know that they've been seduced into making a golden calf of themselves. And as Bill McKibben rightly points out, when Americans, hungry for selfless love, are fed only love of self, they will remain hungry. Over the summer, someone wrote an op-ed piece in the Fountain Hills Times bemoaning what they believe to be no institutional support for LGBTQIA people in Fountain Hills. Pastor Beth Gallen, New Journey Lutheran, wrote a letter in response saying, "Hello, we're here! Both New Journey Lutheran and the Fountains are open and affirming of LGBTQIA people." I called Pastor Beth to thank her for her letter and was musing about writing my own as well, but mine would point out how not only were New Journey and the Fountains the only churches in Fountain Hills who affirmed the LGBTQIA community, but were among the only churches that affirm women in leadership. Based on their intentional misreading of the Bible, most of the other churches in town actively exclude women from any form of leadership, on their boards, as elders, and especially as pastors. The Baptist Church is actually going backwards, explicitly voting this summer to strengthen their exclusion of women from leadership. They even kicked out Pastor Rick Warren's Saddleback Church because Warren had the audacity to suggest that women can have gifts for ministry beyond Sunday school teacher. And here's the truth. According to the Bible, the same Bible these hypocrites claim to revere, the Apostle Paul clearly praised women as apostles, deacons, and put women in charge of various churches. But because their backward and misogynistic male leadership is afraid of losing power, they sweep that fact under the rug to keep women in their place. Honestly, it boggles my mind that here in the 21st century, there are still so many intelligent, savvy, independent women who let themselves be discriminated against in the name of God. And why? Because they are people of the unread book. They believe what they're told rather than actually reading the text. We have to get on message. And part of that message is that the Jesus of the Bible has been hijacked by people promoting causes that do not reflect Jesus' actual teachings and values that are contrary to our modern principles. Since the beginning of time, emperors, politicians, and the rich have sought to co-opt the teachings of Jesus for their own advantage. Today, the dominant messages of the typical suburban megachurch carry on that tradition by comforting the comfortable and emphasizing personal empowerment Christianity. They muffle Jesus' words, deaden Jesus' call, and in the end, silence Jesus' true message of radical inclusion, social justice, and compassion in favor of a watered-down, personal holiness, end-time Pharisaism. Yeah, the Bible is a predominantly unread book. It's long, and there are some difficult things to understand and puzzle out, but if we're going to claim to take Jesus seriously, perhaps we should at least have the decency to try and get what he taught right. And it seems to me that starting with love your neighbor as yourself would be a pretty good place to start. Be well.